Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Good.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself all the game too seriously. I'm JB. On this, the most rugbyest of weekends, a World Cup semi-final weekend, no less, where we'll be talking all things England, all things Wales, and in a subsequent pod we'll be doing the Premiership, so look out for that on your feed. But I am joined to my left by Phil Logan. Hello, Phil.
Hello, JB.
And down the line in Cavos? Or somewhere?
Falaraki.
where are you, mate? Oh, it's Tim Cocker.
I'm clubbing it in Falaraki.
Wow. No,
I've come to the home of shipping containers, Greece. I am in a little town called Stupa, just down the coast from Kalamata, where all the olives are. Where all the olives are from.
And what are we doing? Are we looking for a new shipping container? Is that your reason for being there?
Yeah, it's a business trip. I would never miss a World Cup semi-final weekend for anything unless it was very important. And yeah, so upgrading the shipping container is number one priority.
Now, I have to ask this, Tim, because, you know, you're not backwards in coming forwards, particularly on Twitter, and you were very quiet during the England match. It's suspiciously quiet. What was going on?
Yes, well, as I mentioned on the last podcast, I ridiculously had a family trip booked and our flights were during the England game. At one point on Friday evening, I thought I was actually going to be handed a gift because some trespassers onto some overhead power lines meant I almost didn't get a train back from Euston to Manchester.
No, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, that would have been...
And then there was a 15-minute delay for my flight, but unfortunately no Extinction Rebellion protester decided to come and sit on my plane for a couple of hours so I could watch the game. So I was in the air oblivious, and I thought, I'm definitely going to find out the result. But nonetheless,
Amazing you didn't.
Yeah, so what I did is just before the plane landed, I put my headphones in, I put music on, I turned it up, I didn't acknowledge or look at anybody.
Hello.
Yeah, I had you the whole time. Yeah. I think it was your headphones.
Carry on.
Okay. No, I didn't look at anybody. I just had music on very loud, and I looked like a kind of grumpy emo kid, just looking at the floor. To the point that my mum had organised. My mum sort of lives out here most of the time. So that's who I'm staying with. So someone was dropping their daughter off and had agreed to take us back to the little town, and I basically, before I even introduced myself to the guy, I just walked up to him and said, "Do not tell me the rugby score." Nice to meet you. But I managed to watch it on ITV Hub through a VPN in delay without having a clue what happened.
Oh, my God. So this nearly put me into a very interesting ethical dilemma, because I text you as soon as the England result was over because I knew you were in the air. And I just said, "Tim, you've got to dial in." And I was playing with, do I tell him the result to get his reaction live on air? It never occurred to me you just watch the game again. Or do I lie to you about it and then let you watch the game?
Oh, that would have been awful to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, oh, New Zealand won by 30 points. Now, enjoy the game.
I wouldn't have bothered watching the game. I left my phone in airplane mode till about 6 p.m. local time, so what, the equivalent of 8 p.m. 6 p.m. local time here. So
better safe than sorry.
I'd get put nothing to chance whatsoever, and so I had all the same emotions that you would have been going through, Phil.
Oh, the roller coaster of emotions.
Roller coaster.
It was a roller coaster of emotions.
Was it not just quite straightforward?
Well, you would think so.
I would.
So looking back, the game was England were dominant. England were, from the first 90 seconds to the last minute, the better team throughout the whole game.
Mm.
But they failed to get enough points on the board. I mean, were it not for that try, the try in the first 90 seconds, it could have been a very different game.
Well, do you know, I don't think England were just dominant. I think there's a word beyond dominant, which I'm searching for and I can't find. Because this was only the tip of the iceberg. Frankly, the disallowed try...
The two disallowed tries.
Yeah, the one I'm thinking of, the particularly egregious one, was that sort of crossing one. Because as far as... Was it Tom Curry?
It was...
The Hill Sport. Curry was the dummy running the screen line.
As far as I was concerned, the second, I think it was Retallick that bit on that.
Whitelock. Bit.
He'd made his decision.
Yeah.
It was not a blocking thing. He did not impede him. I mean, he did, kind of. But Whitelock made his decision.
Whitelock got lucky. So Very lucky. I would have disallowed that try.
Oh, it was offside, wasn't it?
It was offside because he takes the contact. So he's in front of the ball, he is then offside.
Oh, and yeah. So there are two calls, right, which they have to be replayed in slow motion and dissected. And then you only disallow it kind of because you...
On a technicality.
Yeah, because you found this thing by accident. The thing that you're originally looking for hasn't come into it. It's something else which you've seen. Like, I always think refs should be made to say, these are the things I'm looking for, and whatever else I see can't be included. Because I thought England were robbed of two tries.
I wouldn't have given either try. The first one. So
you would have in real time.
In real time, I never would have seen it. I would have seen the crossing, and I probably would have considered it, but I never would have seen the fumble in the ruck.
Maul.
It wasn't a fumble.
Hey? It wasn't. It was a pass forward, wasn't it? Forward pass.
The second one was a try. Jamie George had his hands on the ball, as well as whoever the English player that was behind that lost the ball, they lost the ball. It's irrelevant because Jamie George, the guy who was the one that supposedly the ball was passed forward to, had his hand on the ball. You can see it quite clearly, had his hand on the ball the entire time.
I'm not so sure about that. I think he doesn't have... There might have been some contact, but he definitely doesn't have control.
I'm not sure if you're right. I'm not sure if Tim's right, but I do know this.
It
should have been a try. They'd have to look at... I mean, was the question, please let me look at all the hands in the mall?
There was no question. It was a TMO intervention.
It was
Nigel...
Snitch.
Nigel gave the try, and Ford was lining up the goal. So there was no... Nigel did not ask a question.
Unbelievable.
But
another day, that would have mattered, but it did not matter one jot.
No, and even... So they made it interesting. And those two disallowed tries, if those both get given, that's probably what the performance would have deserved. That's probably the scoreline. So had it been 33-7, I think that is the magnitude of the beating that New Zealand were on. And it was only... There was multiple other times when New Zealand disrupted England's ball, secured a turnover or secured a penalty that prevented other tries, but they only happened when England were dominant and in New Zealand's 22. England only really coughed up ball when they got into New Zealand's 22.
Hmm. Yeah, it was...
Phil, I want to hear about the emotional response, because this is... We can get into technicalities and specifics, but ultimately, let's just savour in this moment, because there's a lot of people like you and I, Phil, and JB watching Wales as well, it would have been a purely emotional response. We could sort of dissect, but this is so rare to have such a big amount on the line against such a good side.
Yeah.
So I want to hear what it was like for you watching it.
Rollercoaster is probably the right word, because even though England was so dominant, it was only in the last 5 minutes, really, and probably the last 2 or 3 minutes, when you realise New Zealand can't score two tries from here.
Yeah.
It is done. But because... So I was so, so happy in that first 2 minutes. When Manu went over, I thought that star was so complete and so perfect and so dominant. And I was delighted. And then the next 20 minutes, England continued to have all the territory. They kicked very intelligently, kicked at the right times, and pinned New Zealand back. And I was so happy. But I was getting more and more nervous because they kept on dropping the ball, getting turned over, giving a penalty away at the crucial moments, like I mentioned before. And I was getting more and more convinced that we're not getting enough points on the board. We're not getting enough points on the board.
Yeah, I thought that.
This
well.
Is going to cost
I
us.
I definitely thought that. I was like, they need more points. Every time they get into 22, they need 3 points. And they weren't getting them. And when they were, they were being chalked off the board.
Yes.
That was the annoying part for me.
Frustrating as well. And when that the Ben Youngs try got disallowed, England didn't get any points. New Zealand then managed to exit, and it was settled for another 5 or 10 minutes after that. And you thought, oh, this is going to cost us. This is just going to cost us. But for New Zealand to have, I would really say, zero scoring opportunities.
Yeah.
Because the try came from...
England lost one line out, and it happened to be that one.
I think they lost two, I've got.
Did they?
Well, yeah.
There was
one early on, but that was incredible to only give... I mean, that was probably New Zealand's best chance when Sever Reese was going into the corner and he got bundled out by Slade and Tuolagi, who got across. That was probably their best scoring opportunity, but England had it covered. Their try, and they had no penalties, they had no shots at goal.
Mm.
It was a remarkable all-round performance from England. And something I said on Thursday when we recorded our pre-match preview was England have to kick intelligently, have to kick and trust their defence. And I think England did that. England, they did not just put up senseless bombs or box kicks. They played a few phases, read the field position, and then kicked. And disappointingly for New Zealand, England were repeatedly able to find grass, and that allowed their kick chase to put pressure on the back three.
I mean, there is another side to this story, okay, which, and this is not to take away from England. I do not want to take away from England. They thought they were magnificent in every way possible and beat up New Zealand fair and square. I thought New Zealand were astonishingly arrogant. I think they came into this game thinking they did not need to prepare for England. They were going to beat them using their game plan. They did not need to adapt to anything that England did, even with Scott Barrett.
They put Scott
in the side.
That was the whole chat on Thursday about they've changed because of England.
Yeah, but it's like if you watch them play, with ball in hand, you would assume that they didn't know what England were bringing, like masses and masses of line speed. At one point, Richie Mwanga looks up, throws the pass, and the guy who catches it is stationary. I mean, how unusual is that for New Zealand? And I think they just didn't take the England threat seriously, and they got absolutely hammered for it.
So I partly agree. So, Tim, I totally get your point, and I agree with your point that Scott Barrett was brought into the side to disrupt what had been a dominant line-out for England and try and prevent England from getting those driving mauls. Mm. Now, as it happened, England did a number on the New Zealand line-out. They absolutely, from the go, disrupted and picked off and were totally dominant. I completely agree New Zealand did that to counter England. But then I agree with your point, Jay. There were times when New Zealand's back three were totally out of position,
hence
England finding grass. And there were times, you call it right, that Manu was shooting up every time. And he made a couple of brilliant hits. But he was shooting up to prevent that quick pass from Mwanga. But Mwanga was looking for it.
And still giving it.
And he gave it a few times, but he stopped it a few times. But once he's dummied it or looked to go for it and then stopped, there's nothing on for him.
Yeah,
there was no out.
This is what I think the big difference is between, say, a Ford and a Mwanga, especially the way that Ford's played this World Cup, which is, I suspect if all of Ford's options were cut off, he'd probably either hold on to the ball or kick it away. Or second time it happened, he would do a little dink. Mwanga. And I wonder if this is the next point. It will come back to haunt them that they didn't play Barrett at 10. Because he was reading...
to attack the line.
Yeah, he was reading the game completely wrong. Completely wrong. And we spoke about potential weaknesses in the New Zealand team. And the only thing we could really come up with, because they were so, so good against Ireland.
Yeah.
Was maybe as a little bit of inexperience as, a little bit of inexperience on the wing. I think that was showed up big time.
It was. And I think if Hansen was going to pick again, the change from the previous week wouldn't have been Barrett, because he changed him at half time. Scott Barrett, that is.
Yep.
Because he brought Kane on at half time. The change would have been playing Ben Smith and probably Jordy Barrett in the
exactly
back three.
Exactly right.
I was thinking, watching that game, I thought New Zealand were crying out for Ben Smith.
Yeah.
Whether he plays on the wing or whether he plays fullback, it doesn't matter, but he had to be in that back three. Because yeah. England so easily picked off with their kicking game.
Yeah, I thought England would. I mean, that. Don't get me wrong. England were magnificent. It's the most.
I do want to jump in there and say I'm absolutely astonished that the takeaway from that is that there was arrogance on New Zealand's part that they didn't prepare for England.
No. My takeaway is they were amazing.
We haven't seen this England team play at that level, and that no team in the World Cup could live with that England performance.
That is a fair point as well.
I don't think
to suggest that was like they were rabbits in the headlights. You had guys with over 100 caps. You had Kieran Reid and Sam Whitelock. What really amazed me was the shots that were cut to them after they've, you know, the turnover has been completely ruined by Underhill and Curry again. And they're walking back with a 10-metre penalty, and there's a close-up shot on Whitelock or Reid, and they are rabbits in the headlights. Yeah. These are guys who've won two World Cups and have got over 100 caps, and they looked shell-shocked. So I think it was arrogance and not preparing for England. They just battered Ireland, and they battered South Africa first game. So I think that's... to be honest, I think that's a ridiculous thing to say.
Well, it's not. We have seen this England team before, because I've even said it myself. The performance it reminds me of is when Ireland played them in Dublin in the Six Nations. England came up the traps, they were not favourites to win, and they smashed them. And when England play like that, they can and do beat pretty much anyone. You know, I honestly don't think that New Zealand thought that they'd be in a situation where they couldn't impose their game on England. They didn't expect to be in a situation where they'd have to be reacting. They thought England would be reacting to them.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Yeah. Whether you put it down to arrogance, I do think New Zealand were underprepared for this game. I think it showed.
Yeah.
But take nothing away from England, because that was a phenomenal England performance. And the key takeaway for me, having watched it again in the gym yesterday afternoon, England can get better because of all those chances they missed. And God, if England have that same intensity, that same work rate, that same physicality, the same skill at the line out, and the same driving ball and all the rest of it, but finish their chances, they don't have two disallowed tries, they don't knock on multiple times in the opponent's 22, they can get even better.
I am going to rewrite history a bit now, okay? or at least think about it slightly differently. I think that performance by England is going to be devastating to New Zealand. Their whole system, the players that remain there, and I think that's going to affect the whole New Zealand team for a couple of years. And the reason I think that is, sometimes you lose, don't you? But you think, God, well, I put my best foot forward. There's nothing more that I could possibly do. But England won in such a style against New Zealand that they were demoralised. It's like what Tim said about Whitelock scratching his head. And was it Whitelock or Retallick who gave away a penalty? When they had a penalty under sticks, one of them reacted to someone else.
Yeah, it
was pushed on in the head.
It was Whitelock pushed Owen Farrell in the head.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
totally off the ball, totally unnecessary.
So stupid. Something which a guy like that would never do.
It was just an open. The right call was a penalty, which is what it got.
Yeah.
It was just a stupid call.
Now, let's have a look at the other performance which I mentioned, which I thought was similar to this, which is the Ireland performance beating them in Dublin. And, you know, if you trace back Ireland's downfall, you might say it started with England demoralising them, and they've got to take a real look in the mirror and think, God, we are beatable. You know, I think this is going to shake the DNA of New Zealand rugby for years to come, certainly next 12, 18 months.
Which is, so...
And it probably did it to Ireland too.
The other side of this would be to look at 2007 and how they reacted in 2007 and went on to be consecutively the best team for 10 years in a row and win the next two World Cups. Mm. Albeit the manner of the defeat is very different.
Yeah.
Because in 2007, New Zealand were the better team and found themselves somehow, thanks to a yes. Thierry Dussertoir masterclass and a couple of dodgy decisions, they somehow found themselves losing. Whereas
but this isn't the same,
is it? They were by far the worst team.
I mean, Kieran Reid must have...
What's unbelievable? If we take it that, from what you say, Phil, that probably an accurate score would have been the 33-7. So like a 25-point margin.
Yep.
The swing that to that from Ireland is like 60 or 65-point swing. Yeah. And so this is what I'm kind of saying. Like, you would have been confident if you were New Zealand going into it. And players
definitely.
That we were only saying on Thursday, wow, Kieran Reid looks back to his best. Well, that second row pairing of New Zealand is something else. And Beauden Barrett at fullback.
I never said Beauden Barrett at fullback.
any sniff of a chance and he's gone. He's Grease Lightning. And none of them had a sniff.
And actually, I don't even think we never said, for instance, Kieran Reid is back to his best. We just said, you know, he's playing like Jerome Kano. And like, he's not been his yep. best for 4 years, I would
he has,
suggest.
That's a huge problem. That's
yeah.
a huge problem.
Yeah,
he's
but it's not the same thing.
Kano.
But he has evolved because he's not got the pace for the outside break in the 13 channel.
Yeah.
And he's a very intelligent rugby player.
There was one player playing against England on the weekend, and that was Ardie Surveyor. Everyone else was just his back and back.
Marius Jonker, the TMO, was New Zealand's best player.
Yeah, I just thought...
Ardie Surveyor, when he went down, I thought, he's out for 12 months with that knee injury.
Yeah.
And then...
He's up!
2 minutes later... He's still as explosive as he ever was.
Yeah, they had another Ardie
brilliant.
Surveyor, or just someone
just
else
like,
to help him out.
Just another 13 or 14 Ardie Surveyors.
Yeah, they'd be. And the other thing was, the only time they were ever making ground was just the sheer individual brilliance of each All Black. So they'd be catching it, but with no typical All Black shape, no runners off the ball, no nothing. They would be catching it like static, a little bit of footwork, make 1 or 2 yards, and that was all they had.
Yeah.
Now, lads, we've had loads of people getting in touch. Ken Halfpenny, this one cracked me up. He said that he had a friend that used the phrase during the game, talking about Sam Underhill, that orc-looking mother mofo.
Yes.
And a comment online says, who knew the secret to England's victory was having Azog the Defiler in the back row?
Yeah, do you know what? We've actually not spoke properly about Sam Underhill. That is a performance for the ages.
Yeah, it's under.
I mean, his last two performances.
This was better.
Been...
Somehow, this was better than the last.
Yeah, I think the slight winner of the Kamikaze Kids last weekend against Australia was Curry, and I think the slight winner this weekend was Underhill. They have both been unbelievably magnificent in both games, and the other performances to name. I think the guys who really stood out for England, Manu Tuilagi was incredible. Some of his decision-making in defence was incredible, and his hits and his carrying. And then I thought Itoji, who was man of the match, amongst some unreal performances, Itoji was sensational. And again, his decision-making. And Jay, you made a point about the Japanese team, about whether their decision making looks good because it comes off well.
Yes.
Itoji,
go on. Fair enough.
Itoji's decision making always looks good because it always comes. He always seems to make the right decision.
Yeah, like in the Lions, it's second test. He does two amazing. He just runs through the line out like it's not there. Intercepts the pass, runs off.
But this where he sacks them all, and he puts his hands over the top of them all.
Oh, was that to... So it collapses, but he puts his hands over right at the last second to stop
yeah.
coming out.
So
loved that.
He forms a maul as it's collapsing, basically, yeah. to lock it in.
We've all
and
been there.
His hit on Whitelock was...
Oh, wow.
Sensational. He topped the turnover count as well.
Who was the one that Underhill hit?
Oh, Kieran Reid.
Love that.
Kieran Reid.
That was...
Changing of the guard there and then.
That was... So normally that kind of hit is a two-man hit. That was not a two-man hit. That was...
And he's, well, he is massive, actually. I've met the guy, and he's bloody enormous. But he's not tall.
No.
Just so wide.
So strong.
So
Itoje is like a delinquent on the rugby field, but like a poet off it.
Well, I think he's like a poet on the field, personally.
He's a punishing poet.
If we suddenly
regress to a warrior poet.
If Extinction Rebellion's predictions come true and we regress to like a primeval tribal species, then Maro Itoje will be emperor.
There's a strong possibility. And I, for one, welcome our new overlord.
Itoje was unreal. He was so good. And the way that him and Laws, with Borthwick's help, I suspect, but the way they read and picked off that New Zealand lineout was something to behold.
How many lineouts do they turn over?
Well, the stats I've got here say only two.
18 turnovers in total.
Jeez.
England.
18 turnovers. The ESPN stats give it only two lineouts lost out of 11 by New Zealand, but I'm certain that's not right. I'm certain it's more than that.
Well, there's Curry, there's Underhill, there's another Curry. We spoke about Willis last week, who was out injured. There's also bloody Ben Earl.
Yeah.
Ben Earl.
Sam Simmons.
Good.
And Mark
God.
Wilson, who put in a fairly handy cameo.
Yeah, of course, Mark Wilson too.
And Ludlam. Yeah.
Now, lads, some other people getting in touch with comments. JB, we're going to have to confront this, mate, because a lot of people... So let's just do it. Greg Coates says...
Oh, sorry, go on.
Farrell was England's top tackler in an England side which restricted New Zealand to almost no chances. Can JB expand on how this demonstrates perfectly Farrell's bad defence as a 12?
We have seen Farrell's bad defence in the past, but look, he did well. You know, there's no point in dwelling on his past failures at the summit of his absolute peak achievement.
Stuart McKenzie, when is this downfall thing kicking in?
2018.
Tom Dow, when does Marcus Smith arrive? He's cutting it a bit fine.
Did he not replace Willie Hines? No.
This is from RB on Twitter. Do we still need to talk about Owen? You've already covered that one. Richard Timms.
I will happily talk about Owen for a long time if you want.
I will talk about Owen, but in a wider context shortly.
Richard Timms says, no question, but I cannot wait for this pod. Simon Wright says, please make sure JB backs the other side for the final. Charlie Hayes says, will there be a whiteboard review on the podcast?
I'm pretty certain as I was walking in, there was a burning whiteboard in the front yard.
Quite possibly.
And Yallop says, I'm patiently awaiting JB's analysis as to why that was actually terrible and Eddie Jones is awful.
Well, I'm glad you asked.
There we go.
I did pose this question to Phil on the way in, which is like, how will Eddie Jones be remembered? Not just in this game, but you know, throughout his entire career. Because it still doesn't make much sense to me, that the whole Eddie Jones thing, the way he's built this team. I mean, can you remember the last time there was a truly successful team which did not know from game to game who their 10 would be? It's a weird thing. You know, it's like an American football team chopping and changing between two quarterbacks. It is very bizarre. It makes no sense to me that the man to fix England's defence is John Mitchell, a man with no defensive background whatsoever, and to put it mildly, a pretty checkered past in coaching. And then there's Eddie himself, who is by all accounts an absolute nightmare to work with, incredibly intense, renowned for the burnout, but he seems to have gone through his burnout phase, come out the other end, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'd want to work for Eddie, and I don't think it's going to age in the same way that, you know, the way Clive Woodward sort of aged and everyone wanted him to come in to do management talks and whatnot. I don't think it's going to age like that. But there's definitely something completely... It's like a mad genius to what he's done.
There's definitely some genius to it.
Yeah.
In the way that I'm looking at things. You can't have that game plan and that execution of a game plan. And reverting back to his 2015 game plan and execution of game plan against South Africa, you can't do that without some real special insight and
well, you have the
knowledge.
You have the madness of the man, and I still believe he's absolutely bonkers. I'm convinced of it. But this game of rugby was about the most conventional game of rugby you could ever win with. The kickers kicked well. The runners ran. There was nothing special. There was nothing gimmicky. It was just men doing really, really good individual competent jobs, better than their opposite numbers.
Well, I think that's wrong. I think that undervalues what England did, because the intensity that they played at, yes, in defence was absolutely incredible. They did all the set piece things really well, disrupted the opposition, but actually in amongst that was Japan like handling, but whilst at the highest of intensities.
I mean, yeah, I think you've just described exactly what I said, Tim.
But well, no, because
I mean, it's the highest compliment. There are other teams
No, because we weren't talking about Japan as, oh, that's just conventional. Their handling skills are just conventionally solid work. No, it was Japan was game-changingly brilliant, very rarely seen handling skills. And England did that whilst having the absolute brutality and intensity that you're describing.
And another thing to look at this performance is, so this is not an overnight performance. No team can just switch on and perform like that. This is a performance that has taken the 4 years, Jay, as you were describing before, that the brutality of the training sessions, the fitness sessions, and Tim, as you're alluding to, the attack-minded training and the core set of skills that has led to a team being able to execute in that manner. It's not... Eddie Jones repeatedly referenced last week the 2.5 years build up to this specific game, because that's how long they knew they were playing the All Blacks for. But it's the full 4 year transition from Lancaster's England to Eddie Jones's England.
Yeah, it's remarkable actually, because I honestly did not think that this was I did not think it was even close to being doable, and I still looking back at it. You know, let's rewind to say the Six Nations and review the Six Nations again. I still don't think it's possible.
I'm amazed where England have got to, and it's only when you look back with hindsight. Eddie Jones has said for the last 3 years, it's all about the World Cup. It's all about the World Cup. It's 3 years. It's all about the World Cup.
And what else would he say?
Judge me on the World Cup.
Yeah, judge me on my second Six Nations.
Which
yes, and I guess we thought yeah, that exactly. was, oh yeah, he's saying that to divert attention away from the fact he's just made some really odd decisions about selections for youngsters in the squad and left out some really experienced guys. And that's why he's saying that, because they've just been a bit humbled in the Six Nations, or they've had a really horrible tour to South Africa where they looked out of shape. But we thought it was diversionary. But actually, I think what we can probably say in hindsight, because of what Phil just said, it's not an accident, is he meant it.
I don't know. Well, it's like, did you ever watch True Detective Series 2?
Series 1. Series 1 was immense.
Series 1 was immense. Right?
I started Series 2. I couldn't actually finish it.
Series 2 was an absolute dumpster fire.
It was awful.
Yeah.
And one of the things...
Vince Vaughn is a bad guy. You what? Do me a favour.
Exactly. but the thing which stood out for me about it was so many storylines just disappeared. They just were removed. And it feels like this is kind of what England have done. Like, where's the Brad Shields storyline gone? Where did the Dylan Hartley one go? Where did the two? You know, where did Robshaw at
Haskell,
six go?
Haskell and Robshaw.
Yeah, gone. Marcus Smith gone. You know, and some. How is this? How does
Jack,
a world
Jack Maunder.
gone? You know, how does a world class team rely on Ben Youngs? And yet, he was okay. He had some Ben Young style moments.
He had a couple of passes where he just needs to pass to George Ford, but he kind of takes three steps, pumps it. George Ford is expecting the ball, looks like he's going to go for a gap, and then passes it. So like four or five. So Ford just gets man and ball. Now it was only a couple of things. And
how many does it take?
The try.
Well, in this case, three.
The try that could have been a try. His try. He took that very well. And some of his box kicks. He didn't box kick a huge amount, but some of his box kicks were very good.
Yeah. Still makes no sense to me that they were brilliant.
What you say, you're absolutely right. In that, if you were like in a Hollywood movie, when there's like a Rocky movie or the Karate Kid or something, you have a montage that just, you know, gradually shows improvement and keeps coming back to the same things. The montage of Eddie Jones's last 4 years would have, like, who's he?
Judo.
Yeah. The Eddie Jones, don't mention judo.
The Eddie Jones montage, right, would be more like a film about a test pilot in the early 1920s and just taking up planes and smashing them into mountains over and over again until he finally got it right. That's how I see it going.
But that he has spoken about having to have that level of physicality and weeding out people who just cannot live and cannot match with that level of physicality. Because in this game, I said after 20 minutes before, I was certain England cannot keep that tempo up.
Agreed.
He's going to come back. But I kept saying that after 35 minutes, after 45 minutes, after 60 minutes. I was like, this is it. They are, every single man on the England team is out on their feet.
There was an Itoje turnover. I think it was Itoje. And the way Ford celebrated, it might have been on like 68 minutes. And Ford just throws his hands up and goes, yeah! I thought, oh, they believe it now. This actually is over. And you're right, Phil. I have seen them play very well. Scotland first half, example, which I always go back to. I've seen them switch off, and they didn't switch off.
Yeah, yeah, which in the past they have. Particularly 2018 and the Scotland and Wales games this year, they did switch off multiple times.
Yeah.
But they've found that balance of the right personnel, the right work rate, the right finishers on the bench, and the right level of fitness. Eddie Jones kept referring to in the warm-up games, in all his press conferences, in the warm-up games, when they hammered Ireland by 50-odd points and they thrashed Wales, he kept saying, we're doing okay, we're on the right path, we've just got to get a bit better and we've got to get some fitness every time. We've got to improve our fitness, we've got to improve our fitness, we've got to improve our fitness.
Crikey. Change of subject. What did you think of Steve Hansen's comments in the press conference?
I thought overall he was very good. His first 2 or 3 minutes were waxing lyrical about how good England had played, how well they'd played. I thought his interpretation of the journalist question that he classed as disrespectful was wrong, because he himself had said at halftime, I asked them to get hungrier.
By the way, the worst advice ever.
I mean,
that is like a boxing corner saying, hey, champ, want it more.
Yeah.
You need to be told what you need to do.
No, I'm not suggesting... That's what he said. I'm sure there was more to it than that at halftime.
Hey, champ, suck it up.
But then to get offended and suggest it's disrespectful for a journalist to ask about the statement that you've just made...
I hate this notion of respect. Which, I mean, it's not like they pushed him around or vandalised his car. They just asked him a question.
Yeah.
And I think the reason he went off like that is because it hit home.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah.
You weren't prepared, you weren't hungry enough. And I think there's two things that sort of cross into each other. So, did you think he meant, let's go outside, like, you know, let's go outside?
I don't think he was offering him out. I don't think he was suggesting, let's have a fight. I think he was saying, I will happily talk to you some more about just how much these boys care. Because these boys, they do.
I could only assume it meant come outside and watch training. But then I thought a video analysis session before. I mean, I did actually think that's what he meant. Like, you need to get outside more rather than watch games from inside.
Yeah, maybe.
Tim?
I totally agree with what Phil said. I would have done what that journalist did.
Yeah.
You've just listened to a head coach say a phrase, I asked them to be hungrier. So you say, so why do you mean by that they weren't hungry enough? And if so, why was that? The journalist was only doing what a journalist should do.
It's a good question.
I agree. So I think generally there was another press conference today where Kieran Reid and Steve Hansen came out and spoke again. And do you know what? Overall, and it's what New Zealand always do in rugby. They were magnanimous. They showed brilliant sportsmanship. Steve Hansen talked about how their coaches went up and had a beer with the England players and congratulated them. And some of the England boys went into the New Zealand dressing room and they shared a beer and a lot of camaraderie. So I think Steve Hansen has acted in a classy fashion. Kieran Reid could not be a classier human being.
Yeah.
Well, interesting that one. I always refer back to Kieran Reid Lions Test 3 when the decision seems to be going his way, and he magnanimously said to Sam Warburton, "Hey pal, that's just how rugby is." Gives him a little tap, and then they go, "Oh, decision reversed, scrum Lions. What ref? What? I don't believe it." And I just think he's very, very good at graciously winning because he's so good at it. I think after a couple of hours or 10 hours or so when he came back out, he'd got his head together. But I don't think he's always that gracious. I think that's one of the one of the common misconceptions about him, as great as he is.
Everyone wants to win.
Can we say now that Owen Farrell is a world-class 10, world-class 12, world-class leader? And that smirk during the hacker. Oh! Man, we've got
Talk me through this. I missed the first 5 minutes of the game, so I missed the first try because I could not find my bloody Sky controls. I was losing my head. How did they line up against the hacker?
So the hacker was done in a triangle. When you're setting up snooker balls or pool balls, like that basically, with the front man facing England, and TJ Perenara calling it and marching amongst the guys. England matched the pinnacle of the triangle with a V. So Owen Farrell was in the centre of the V, and the whole of the rest of the team spread out to the side, which is interesting because they said, I can't remember who said it, they said they didn't want to be static and just... Sorry, who is it, Tim?
I've heard a couple of different people talk about it, but Underhill said they were focused on really getting into it early, and they thought the hacker is the start of the match as far as they were concerned. So they didn't want to just stand there and be passive. So they stepped forward towards them in that V to match them. A great bit of theatre, but I think they were trying to send a message going, no, we're coming for you.
I'm not sure I like that.
I liked it.
Well, why the V? I just don't like... Why can't you just stand in a line? By the way, I'm not pro-hacker in any way. I just don't like the idea that you've had to think about it before you went and did it.
So I think I saw somewhere else what they got told was you can't encroach within a certain distance.
That's right, you can't.
You can go
over the halfway line.
No, it wasn't over the halfway line, though. But the touch judges were trying to usher them back. But someone said...
there was a couple of players that went over halfway, Marla and Billy Vunipola. Yeah. A couple of players on each side went, and so they were trying to get them back behind the halfway line.
But from what I heard, what one of the players said, I can't remember who it was, they said you can't go within... They'd been told you can't go within a radius of them. So, you know how Ireland did it years ago? God, 10 years ago at least, when Ireland were marching forward as the hacker was going on. So you can't do that.
Yeah.
So you can't do that because you're going in the radius. But apparently they've been told you can go all the way around them if you want. But so the V is quite a nice way. Obviously they're not going to fully encircle them. The V is quite a nice way of keeping the radius and keeping England's solidarity.
I just don't think you need to be thinking about it. You know what I would do? I'd get in a huddle and ignore it.
I think you've got to face it.
Why? I do what I want.
You do what you want.
I would say I'd tell the boys to take some balls out and just practice passing between three or four of you. Just pass in a circle.
So I liked it, and England clearly used that energy to good effect.
So the picture of
Farrell.
It's something so naff. Not about the hacker itself. I kind of like that. I mean, the hacker has its place. Semi-finals is the place for the hacker. I just think the response to the hacker is so naff because you're trying to draw upon a well of your national culture, which maybe just isn't rich enough to support it. I'll give you an example. I thought it was so cringeworthy when Wales tried to sing down the hacker. Go play rugby. Just go play rugby. France and zipping their tops for the tricolour. I just think it's so naff. Just ignore it. That's so much better. I think Mako went and warmed up once, didn't he?
I can't remember.
I'm sure in the Lions he went for a little jog.
Maybe.
That's what I would do.
It worked well anyway.
Well, I would...
What would you do, Tim?
I'd say that I think Eddie Jones and one or two of the senior players just said, I'll tell you what, we're going to do this. They all did it. They took it as the start of the match isn't when the whistle blows, it's when we when we stand opposite the hacker, it was symbolic, but the way they played in the first 90 seconds suggests that it got them in the right headspace. So
yeah. Well, who am I to question?
A great bit of theatre, and that smirk from Owen Farrell will be a meme for a long, long time.
If it will. If England had lost that game, then that smirk would have been all over the front and back page of New Zealand press. It would have been everywhere. Fortunately, it worked out quite nicely for him.
Poor New Zealand.
By the way, we should mention New Zealand press because I read some of the player ratings, and they gave.
Sorry, can I just ask? Do you do this to annoy yourself, or do you regularly read the New Zealand press to catch up with? I don't know, sheep shearing news or whatever they write about over there.
I was curious how they would be reporting, and yeah. I was not surprised to see things like, for example,
that was my morning New Zealand Herald.
They said Henry Slade, who was lucky to remain on the field.
Why would he do?
The tackle on Sevi Reese, which was officiated brilliantly by Jonker and Nigel Owens.
It was correct, but they gave Owen Farrell, for example, 6 out of 10. They gave, I think, the highest any England player got was 8, and that was Sam Underhill. But everyone else was like 5, 6s, 7s.
Oh bless!
I mean, I would be loathed to give a 10 in any circumstances, but Manu, Itoje, and Underhill would be. I'll give them 9.9. They were unbelievably good.
Yeah, I'll just say this when I finish getting dressed. There we go.
Okay. It's hot in here, isn't it?
Yeah, I've put the heating on and I've lost the thermostat. It's one of these little mobile ones. Open the door.
I know what you mean. It's really hot here today. It was too hot. It was 27. It's 27 of blue skies. It's too much.
It is absolutely freezing outside in Manchester.
I think some of the problems with these national press outlets, because they are writing for one constituency, namely the public of New Zealand or the public of England, they get so caught up in the players that they're covering basically all their lives that they forget other players exist and how to rate those players against the players that they cover. It's very, very common in England and English rugby coverage. So it doesn't surprise me that they rated them low because, you know, as Eddie Jones said, and he's probably right in this, as objective as they pretend to be, most of them are just fans with keyboards.
And also...
They don't even realise it. It's not a criticism, it's just the reality.
And there are a number of journalists all over the world who, if they continually spout incorrect opinions, that, mm-hmm. that gets shared more than a standard boring match report. So,
yes,
there is definitely an incentive behind it.
As I found out.
although what I would say is it's quite interesting, the journalists who have spent the majority of the last 4 years being very, very down on Eddie Jones, suddenly talking about him in the most sparkling, glowing terms if the last 4 years hadn't happened.
To be fair, the only one I can really think of, and I agreed with him when he said this, was Stephen Jones.
Stephen Jones
called it perfectly when England didn't play well and downfall 2018 occurred. And he was perfectly consistent. The others, I think, truly, have just been believing everything which England have said from day one. I don't think there's any real differentiation there. Do you?
Cool. Some other messages that might spark a little chat. Rugrats Rugby Dahl, our follower, thank you very much. At Rugby Podcast, he tweeted, if Johnny May is out, mm-hmm. who do you start in the final? I mean, we can get into this later in the week, but just because he did pull up with his hamstring, he could have put the hammer down and gone round Barrett, you feel, but wasn't 100%.
There's only one guy for me, but I'll let Phil go first.
So that sprint against Barrett was very interesting. Now, Barrett did have the angle on him, but I'm certain a fully fit Johnny May... Well, no forward is catching him. No forward in world rugby is catching him.
Ardie Surveyor could.
Possibly Ardie Surveyor. So I am certain he was speed limited because of his hamstring on that, which raises the question, and I think this is fact, this is the way I'm interpreting it. He was picked for his aerial ability. And New Zealand tried it early on. They put two or three bombs onto him that he took brilliantly over his head.
Yes.
And they stopped doing it after that.
Yeah, but I carried on.
He was not fit, and he was picked because, not because of his pace, but because of his aerial solidity, which is an incredible place for Johnny B to be in compared to where he was, say, 4 or 5 years ago.
Agreed. So who replaced him, Phil?
If he's fit, Jack Noll.
Tim?
Yes. If Jack Noll is fit, then it's easy. If not, then probably... Oh man, but South Africa are going to kick loads. I was going to say, this is what worries me.
Yeah,
because
me too.
Joe Thockenstinger worries me that they'll kick to him and get more success. But I would say Joe Thockenstinger out of the people in the squad if Jack Noll's not fit.
That's where I am. But
well,
if
he's not fit for one more game, you may as well send him home. And for me, the only one man starts, Marcus Smith. Guile, skills, kicking. Get him in.
Get him in at 15. Elliot Daly to the wing.
Well, I mean, I guess Farrell could play 15.
Farrell can do whatever he wants.
Move him to fly half. I don't know.
It wouldn't entirely surprise me to see England push Slade to 15 and Daly on the wing. Because you've then got two wing fullbacks playing wings. And Henry Slade, who's... Well, according to Exeter's profile, 6'4", and very good in the air.
Yeah, and 100 kgs at least.
Yeah, at least.
At least.
Michael Thomas has tweeted saying the Spider-Man cam shots have to be rationed a bit more in the final. They did go for it a lot on this semi-final, didn't they?
I like them, though.
I like them at the right time.
Well, that's it. I mean, isn't that the art of being a director, though? I mean, I'll leave them to make those decisions.
So some of the coverage has left me a little bit dissatisfied for this World Cup. So the overall coverage has been brilliant, but there's times when a director makes he will do a replay in ultra slow motion, but replay the wrong thing. So you're waiting for like the knock on or the hit or the tackle or whatever it is.
Two players high fiving.
Yeah,
with sweat glistening off their hair.
Or he'll give a 15-second long ultra slow motion that stops half a second before the contact or the thing that you want to see.
The way I look at it is, I know Spider-Cam has actually been around as a concept for bloody, maybe a decade or so now. It's been around for a long time, but they don't use it as much. I think they're just sort of getting used to when can they use it, when's the best time, and it'll sort itself out. Don't worry about it.
There was a brilliant NFL play that was shared on Twitter, Instagram, everywhere last week. Or
was
two,
it from behind the quarterback?
Ago. No, it was a punt return.
Ooh,
and it was from so low down in front of the returner at the start and moving with him as he weaved his way through the defence. It was very impressive. Now, you can't do that in Union because of the chance of kicking. You can't get that close to the action in those scenarios. But
it must be bloody off-putting.
I like it for camera shot, for scrum shots, and I like it at times... So, like, static scrums to see how teams are lined up. I like it for
agreed.
That kind of thing. Other than that, when there's action, I find it a bit hard to follow.
Agreed. Right, well, congratulations, England. I think we'll leave them there.
Yes.
We'll talk about that, obviously, again, later in the week when it gets to teams being announced for the Rugby World Cup final. But let me just mention Ben Cisneros, who tweeted at Rugby Podcast to say... And this dovetails nicely into semi-final number two. Has there ever been two more contrasting semi-finals? England versus New Zealand, scintillating and fast-paced. Wales v South Africa, both sides trying to play as little rugby as possible.
I thought, for my money, the Wales-South Africa game was better. I thought it was amazing. I really thought it was outstanding.
I would describe it as one for the purist. If you're into that kind of thing...
Well, there's more points. it was a closer game.
Yeah, it was a closer game. I will give you that.
It's so hard to describe because everyone will say, oh, look at him just kicking this, that and the other. Now, think about England for a second. England beat the All Blacks with what is basically a conventional game plan of just being better than your opposite number. Albeit, yeah... To mention the skills, which are unusually good. But, you know, they were just normal skills done exceptionally well. Think about it like two armies who both have a fully kitted out modern army going out against each other, and the better modern army beating the other modern army. What you saw against Wales with the Wales game was some sort of like insurgent force. They couldn't match South Africa for power. They couldn't just play a conventional game plan, and somehow they stayed in this till the very, very end. And I thought it was quite an inspiring effort by Wales. I'm not overly upset that they exited, and I'm not overly surprised. In fact, I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier, because what they've been doing for so long is staying in game, staying in the fight, and just relying on a coin flip right at the end to see if they can win it. And their luck ran out. That's basically what happened.
I think you're right on all of that stuff. It was Wales were magnificent to stay in the fight.
Yeah,
it was not. So for me, it was not an exciting. It was nervy because both teams could have won at the end, but the brand of rugby that both teams played was just. It's when you contrast it with the intelligent kicking and the defence and discipline and the high skills of England, it just fell short.
Well, I thought Wales were remarkably disciplined. Because every sinew of them would have been wanting to do something else. Every time they carried that ball and got smashed backwards, they knew they had to have a couple of carries. How does a team get within 3 points of its opposition? And I think they only got over the gain line 22% of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. So then they send up the kick. Lee Halfpenny, who was much maligned before the game, I thought was brilliant. Just did exactly what he's meant to do. And they dragged South Africa down to their level.
I think South Africa wanted to play that simplistic game. And by simplistic game, I think both teams, to oversimplify it, they played one up rugby, two or three phases, box kick.
The All Blacks would have murdered Wales.
That was it.
Today. They would absolutely murdered them.
They might get a chance on, well, they will get a chance on Friday.
Yeah, and we'll see how that goes. It won't go well. I'll tell you, one of the best bits of rugby I've seen for so, so long was that Welsh scrum for the try. To have no success all game, but when it mattered, win the scrum and score the try off first phase. That was something particularly special. I really liked the part where, I mean, Andre Pollard must have been completely rattled. He is, by any measure, one of the top three fly halves in the world, you would probably say.
Yeah.
If not top five, it doesn't matter.
He's very
good fly half.
Yeah.
And what was he thinking kicking? I mean, you had that passage of play where Hadley Parks gets charged down, immediately followed by Andre Pollard getting charged down.
I know.
I mean, these are not comparable players, yet they're playing comparably. And I just thought the whole thing was absolutely brilliant.
Can I just sort of jump in on that? Because I've just heard you describe, and I thought that the Welsh try was taken really well. But I've just heard you describe a scrum and two passes as, quote, particularly special.
Yeah.
And England as nothing particularly special. It was just...
No, Tim, you are completely mischaracterising my... No, I'm not having this. You have completely mischaracterised... Completely mischaracterised what I'm saying about England. I'm saying England were amazing at doing all the normal stuff particularly well. They beat New Zealand playing amazing rugby, amazing normal rugby at the highest pinnacle of what that sport is meant to be. That is not in any way disrespectful at all.
Okay. All right.
At all. Why is Wales because you know, to have the balls to go and call that when your scrum is under the cosh,
yeah.
And then for everyone who's under a tremendous amount of pressure to execute and then score that first phase, that's unusual. Put it mildly.
I thought that was the call that had lost Wales the game.
Yeah, I agreed. I thought that was his Robshaw moment.
When they made that call, I was screaming, no, you do. That's the last thing you want to do. Take the three, rebuild, get down there again.
Yeah.
But it was the right call because as we saw as South Africa closed out the game, Wales' only hope of going... So if Wales take the three there, South Africa will kick deep into Wales' 22. They'll kick all the way and make Wales play out of their own 22.
Yeah.
The only way that Wales could get 80, 90 metres down the pitch was by grinding out and actually, look, they need to win a penalty in their 22,
yep.
kick it 40 yards, secure the line out, win another penalty, kick it another 40 yards, and then hope they can crash over yeah. the line. There was no other way, watching that full 80 minutes, that Wales were going to get there. So it was the right call, but it was a gamble. And to
absolute gamble.
To execute was superb.
Which is the story of Wales' last 2 years, I think. The other thing that they managed to somehow do was get the South Africans dousing themselves into the high ball. Willie LaRue dropped two.
Faf
dropped Faffy. One. I mean, they were beating South Africans in the air. And I think there was a period about, I would say about 65 minutes in, and the penalties were like 8-3 in favour of Wales. I thought they've actually got them here. They've actually managed to make South Africa doubt themselves.
I can understand why it was an arm wrestle like that, but I was really disappointed in both sides, actually.
Agreed.
For being so negative. I understand that this happens at this stage, but they're so much better than that. In the case of South Africa, I think you can. Well, no, they are, and they have shown that they are. South Africa, certainly the way they ripped England to shreds in the summer of 2018, and we talk about what an incredible backline and stuff. They didn't even try. And Wales, what I found disappointing about Wales, albeit that they, notwithstanding the fact they were incredible, and as we talked about in the last week of podcasts, they are never beaten, and the bravery of that side and the grit is inspiring.
So just to go back to your point, when you say Wales are better than that, how would you set up this Wales team to do better against South Africa?
Well, I think they showed it in this very game. They kicked aimlessly for most of the match. I don't agree that their kicking game was good. I thought it was terrible.
It was terrible.
Generally.
There were a few nice kicks, never tried but most to, were terrible.
Yes, most were terrible. It was aimless. And I think Dan Biggar, for a brilliant player, had a very, very bad game.
Yes, Dan Biggar did.
He was fault for the South African try as well. He was really poor.
And he sliced a kick.
And yeah, by his own high standards. And so they kicked aimlessly. They didn't play. But when they did, on the couple of occasions when either side actually tried to play, it was Wales, and they looked awesome.
Well, you've got to remember, Tim.
But then they went back to aimlessly kicking again.
So I would say they did open up on the occasions they were afforded the opportunity to. Remember, they only crossed the gain line 22% of the time. So if they've gone wide, presumably
because they were passing from nine to a runner.
Yeah, but
yeah, it's one out rugby.
Yeah, but a lot of teams can get over the gain line. Wales can get over the gain line doing that. So you've got to think when they did go wide and do that, that must have been one of the very few times when they were going forward. And also, did you not see Edzebeth picked up someone, I can't remember who it was, but they put their head down, they tried to drive through, it might have been Gareth Davis, in fairness, just picked him up and marched him backwards. I mean, I don't think Wales could have done anything more to win this game, and I think some of the South African physicality was frightening.
Yeah.
I get it. I guess what I'm saying is...
But South Africa going forward weren't up to
much. I think actually Wales players will look back and they'll rewatch that game and go... We were brave, we gave everything, but I don't think we actually... we gave everything. We were as brave and we gave as much effort as we could, but I don't think we gave it everything. They never threw caution to the wind. They never tried anything at any point, and I think they could have won. And another thing that struck me was Mike Phillips, after the game, was talking about, quite rightly... praising the effort, praising how far they've got, what the small resources they have, the small player pool, and to have got to this level was brilliant. But then the phrase he said was, it's a real positive looking ahead to the Six Nations. And I thought, is that the mentality why they didn't win? Because beating England in February is actually kind of enough for Wales.
No. I mean, I think Mike Phillips was just looking for something positive to say. And by the way, he's wrong. Yeah. After Gatland... There is no future. It's just a barren wasteland with stumps of trees, stumps of burnt out trees everywhere. I don't know where Wales go after this game. This probably what we saw was the flame out of Welsh rugby for a long, long time, because I do not think anyone can set up a team like Gatland, and anyone can make Wales as successful as he did. I think we're looking at a long period of about Scotland-level rugby now.
It is fair to say that Gatland has eked out every inch of talent. Yeah, every little drop of talent in that Wales
team has got
the best out of it over the period. I do agree with you, Tim, that I would have liked to see Wales just go wide a little bit earlier.
But with who?
I know.
What, through Hadley Parks?
JD2. JD2.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
He's one of the best in the world.
Yeah, but he's only one guy.
I know.
You talk about Ford and Farrell and, who else was on the field at one point? Slade. There is no equivalent. There is no equivalent. This is what they do.
Gareth Davis, Josh Adams and JD are three of the most explosive players that were on that field in that match.
And who's passing them the ball?
I did. Thomas Williams and Patchell.
I mean,
I did think, would you be better putting Gareth Davis on the wing at one point?
I thought that. As soon as George North went down, I was like, yeah. Watkins coming on. Now, Watkin actually, can move a ball probably better than Hadley Parks, but Hadley Parks isn't going to go on the wing.
No.
Put
Gareth Davis on the wing.
And Hadley Parks has been fine. He's actually summed up Wales perfectly. Under-talented, underpowered. Inspirationally brave. He's been awesome. In fact, he might be my favourite player of the entire tournament because he makes you think that normal people can play rugby at international standards.
Just how much punishment is taken.
Yeah. Now, there is something. I've been thinking about this, and as you well know, I come up with many, many great ideas, and today is no different. And I think I might have come up with something for you to revolutionise the experience of watching a rugby game. Are you ready for this?
Ready.
Tim?
Go on.
Okay. It's going to be proprietary technology, although I'm not entirely sure I can do this because the technology is there. I'm just sort of expanding it. But Wales came out onto this field, and when you think about these two teams, South Africa and Wales, you think, oh my God, Wales are in for it because they're going to get absolutely battered. These South Africans are bloody enormous, particularly in the pack. Wales were 16 or 18 kilograms heavier officially than South Africa. Now, I don't know about you. I'm not sure if I believe that. Do you boys believe that?
No.
I don't either. Now, in Manchester Institute of Sport, have you been there? Is that the right?
Manchester Institute of Health and Performance.
That's the one.
Which we built.
Well, yes, you personally.
Not me.
And tested.
I did test it personally. I won't go into that, but
yes,
there's a sound issue.
So they have these like body pod things, right? And they basically measure your. Tell me if I'm wrong here, Phil. Is it your lean muscle mass?
So it's. I definitely didn't do anything to do with this, but it assesses your body. Yeah. It's not your body mass index. It is the percent of muscle mass, fat mass, bone mass, and water mass, like right. all the rest of it.
Yeah, so if I got this right, you sit in this thing, you completely immersed, your head isn't exposed, you sit in the pod, you close it, and then you come out, and then it tells you stuff.
Yeah.
Right, how about this for an idea? The two teams are in the tunnel, and they both step into what is effectively these enormous mass-measuring machines just before they walk out. Then when they walk out, the stat flies up. Here are the pack weights, but here is the amount of lean muscle mass Wales are bringing compared to South Africa.
Here is the amount of lean muscle mass on Thomas Francis.
Yeah, exactly. Because I thought Thomas Francis is contributing to this pack, much like the way that Weenie Antonio contributes to the French pack. I would love to know what the lean muscle mass is of both those packs, because I'm pretty sure Wales are losing that.
I am all for more data at all times, so I'm 100% behind that.
So I don't know how you do it.
I like that you're encouraging a bit of fat shaming of elite athletes. It might make us mere mortals feel better at home. And secondly, I also like, in kind of ironic fashion, the fact you called Weenie Antonio, Weenie Antonio. I think that's a much better name for him.
Weenie Antonio, that's exactly the one. Yeah, so two mass, whatever they are, and I'm not sure if you put all eight of your pack in, your starting pack, before they come out in the tunnel, or you have extra long ones for the whole team. But I feel just the pack is enough.
Do it for the whole team.
I like it.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
I'm going to ask one question on this, which links to the final. I'm going to maybe defend both sides for playing in quite a negative fashion, because Jerome Garces just did not officiate the offside line for the whole 80 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Concern me if, as I think he might do, he gets the final.
Well, it's not going to be Wayne Barnes.
Nigel?
It's not going to be Jacko Paper. Could be Nigel.
It's going to be Nigel Jerome.
Could be Nigel, yeah.
No. I hope it's Nigel.
Well, I don't know if I can stand the witty comments.
Nigel did very well in the
Yeah, and to be honest...
Although he missed two absolutely, totally blatant forward passes in the last 5 minutes.
He has stopped with the wisecracks, although I can't help but think he won't be able to control himself on the bigger stage.
The bigger stage.
He'll have to put in a quip about football or something.
Yeah.
This isn't Lazio, boys.
This isn't the Emirates Lounge.
Hey! Boring.
he was good in the game, though.
Yeah, he's still a very good ref.
Yeah,
he There's was. No two ways about that.
He was very good.
And thinking what's ahead for Wales, Roger Grace tweeted us to say, is there anything as pointless as a third, fourth place playoff?
I quite like the cruelty, personally. It's so miserable.
It's Friday morning at 9 a.m. I'm not even sure. So I will be very much in work. I'm not even sure I'll be watching it.
No, I won't be watching it.
I'll catch up on the extended. I'll probably watch the game in the gym after that.
It just feels like a very really rough ending for two very good teams.
Yeah,
who don't deserve this.
Do deserve better.
The rugby writers, as much as I disparage them, or maybe the rugby podcasters, because they're a far more knowledgeable bunch. But one or two, or maybe we've all come together in harmony. But we vote on the two most disappointing teams, and they have to play the third place match. So it'd be like Scotland versus Ireland again. That's what I think would be better. And they have to stay for the rest of the tournament.
Everyone stays for the next 2 weeks training for it.
You've got to get through the first round. Yeah, you've got to get through the first round of...
The loser bowl.
Yes. Yeah. In the worst stadium, in the most out-of-the-way place. So if... Yeah, I quite like that.
Behind closed doors as well, so there's no fans there.
Oh, well, there wouldn't be any fans anyway.
Silence. Yeah, total exactly. Silence.
No, worse than no fans. It's just open to school children. Charity tickets, that kind of thing.
Also, talking of awful things, can I just mention Gareth Thomas's gilet jacket combo?
Oh yeah,
what was he wearing?
Yeah,
I actually tweeted that. Yeah, I messaged it to the group.
Japan's hot.
Hot, you have no idea.
Hot.
It is so hot.
Yeah, and he's inside in a TV studio, which has lots of lights. Hang on. He's wearing a gilet under his jacket.
Was he in Was he in Japan or was he in Padstow or somewhere?
I saw a picture of him.
He was in Japan.
Yeah, pitch side.
Oh, well, there you go then.
So he was in Japan.
I mean, having been there, yeah, it's hard. It's hard to wear a simple waistcoat on top of a simple shirt, let alone a gilet and jacket.
Admittedly, it was 10 degrees hotter when we were there.
Yeah. That said, that's a pretty standard look for, your BT Sport crew, Tim.
Oh, pitch side in England is a great look.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tim. It's not good.
No.
And one final one from me, Phil. Just one more. Joe West has pointed out and has tweeted us, and it's worth looking at a picture of this. Straight after the game, Damien Diolande, who had a strong game.
Strong man.
He has an incredibly tanned pair of legs and an incredibly pale body. It looks like two different top and bottom of the body stuck together. It's bizarre.
Wait there, Damien.
Worth having a look at.
Damien Diolande, yeah. Tanned legs.
There you go, Jake.
Google. Ooh.
He's clearly just not had his chest out very much on the beach. Which is surprising and disappointing, I must say.
Yes, agreed.
Because he is a very strong man.
Yeah.
The one thing I kind of touched on it before, but the most disappointing thing about this game was just how simplistic a game plan that South Africa played, and how much they narrowed off and how limited their game plan was. Now, I was watching it thinking, South Africa are kicking more than any team that I've ever seen in this this World Cup. And then I thought, is that right? So I ran the numbers, of course.
Of course.
And in absolute terms, they did not quite hit the absolute high of Ireland.
Is this of all time or this tournament?
No, this is... So, I must... a quick confession to make. I only counted Tier 1 versus Tier 1 games because no one cares how many times New Zealand kicked against Namibia or Namibia kicked against New Zealand in a 70-0 thrashing.
I think you made a lethal error here, Phil.
Why?
I'll tell you why. Because one of the great games of all time, and it's no... I think you'll agree with me when I mention it, did not happen between a Tier 1 and a Tier 2, although they are Tier 1, both Tier 1s now. But it was the France World Cup at home opening game against Argentina, when I am certain Argentina will have kicked more than South Africa.
Well, so I'm only doing this World Cup.
Right.
I'm not going back I'm not going back 12 years.
And weirdly...
And I've counted... So I did Tier 1s plus then Japan and Fiji because they were very, very good. Yeah. Ireland kick more in their win over Scotland. They kicked 39 times. But I then did it relative. So I did the kick percentage compared to runs. And this the South Africa performance was by far the most kicks per run. So they kicked more than 1 in 3.
So they
kicked, or to put it another way, they ran twice and then kicked consistently for 80 minutes.
So tell me, why is this game disappointing when the win against France by Argentina, where they kicked everything, was one of the best games of all time?
It's the intelligence of the kicking.
Well, there was no intelligence.
So there was no intelligence in this game whatsoever.
But there were similar game plans. I mean, they were both unintelligible, and they just wanted to mess it up as much as possible, level out the playing field.
Yeah, but this was trying to win on the law of averages. So, and what I mean by that was, New Zealand, they'd run it twice, or 1.9 times, really. Mm-hmm. So they'd have their 1.9 runs, and then they'd put in a box kick. And that box kick would go between 25 and 35 metres, and it would give them roughly a 40% chance of retaining the ball with a 25 to 35 metre gain. Mm-hmm. But equally, a 60% chance of turning over possession 30 metres down the field for Wales to do exactly the same thing. Hmm. So it was just... It was... Part of me thinks it's maybe there's some strategy, but it was just kicking and hoping for the best, hoping the other team knocks on, hoping they fumble, hoping their box kick isn't quite as well executed as your box kick, and you're slowly going to eat up the pitch in 30-yard chunks. Yeah, well, and that just... It is just dull.
Well, personally, I think people complaining about this are like five-year-olds complaining about the taste of olives. Frankly, your palate just isn't developed enough yet to appreciate what you saw. I think we should leave it there. I think we should leave it there. Tim, have you got any final thought, any parting thoughts for us?
I like that olive analogy.
do you think it's applicable in this scenario, Tim?
Not particularly. I was trying to think of something. It would be like someone complaining about the taste of olives, who grows the most incredible. Oh no, that doesn't even work either. I'm trying to think of something that works.
You two are just spoiled brats addicted to chocolate ice cream.
Sorry, say again.
You two are just spoiled brats addicted to chocolate ice cream, with your irresponsible parents giving it you for breakfast.
I think the only reason I was disappointed in South Africa is because they have shown incredible attacking. Like, go back before the World Cup. You yourself, JB, were talking about there's more to come from this South Africa side. There's more to come. Their attack is incredible. Their backs are amazing, but there's more to come.
Yeah,
there's ways to win. Hey, listen, they're vindicated, I guess, because they're in a World Cup final. But
yeah,
and the result is all that ultimately matters. And if that style is what they bring against England and it works, well, fair enough. But this is a stage where I also want to see... Well, this is a stage where we've also seen Japan captivate people's imaginations and awaken a rugby interest in a huge nation and in places around the world. And come on, South Africa, do your bit as well, because you can. And you can win the World Cup by doing that too.
Right, well, that is your parting thought.
Well, my parting thought, I've just checked your artisanal hand-plucked box of olives.
Yes.
And actually, it's frozen, unsalted, unsweetened porridge pellets.
Oh, right.
You've been had over, mate. What can I say?
Well, there we go. A suitable end to the podcast. We will be back with you in your feed tomorrow with the midweek domestic podcast, the MWDP, where we'll talk all things Premier Rugby and maybe Pro 14, maybe.
Maybe one game. We'll
maybe
sneak
one
into
game,
the
which
Pro
we might do in
review.
Detail, might sneak in. But until then, you can find us on social media. Tim at Cocker, me at Jay Beardmore, this podcast at Rugby Podcast. And until tomorrow, when we'll all reconvene and see you again, from me, Tim and Phil, goodbye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.